It's an honor to be called an elder, and it's an honor to also be able to, tell stories.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Walter Cook. My Anishinaabe name is Cheekshkai, which is First Nations in Ojibwe for stargazer. That's in translation. And I work at the Aboriginal Health Center as a counselor and elder. That's my title here. It's an honor to be called an elder, and it's an honor to also be able to, tell stories of our history and different stories that are teaching tools to parents, to other people. In the old days, if you go back, say, 70,000 years, stories were told in the wintertime. And the main reason for that was in the summertime, in the springtime and summertime, people are busy working outside. People are busy visiting each other. And we continued that tradition by going on holidays, vacations. So there's really no time to sit around telling stories. And so we used to save that part of our culture for winter. In the winter time, you stay indoors, and that's when storytelling would begin. Like when the first snowfall comes down, and then the kids are inside. It used to be done in the evening, after supper. People would sit around their fire, and the grandparents or the grandfather would start telling the stories, and people would just kind of come and, like the family members would just kind of come and sit down and sit around. Or they might have arranged every full moon will tell stories. You know, there was a calendar. There was a way of keeping a calendar of those kind of events. So every full moon will tell stories. And when people know it's full moon, they would go to that one house and people would tell stories. And so that's basically why we tell stories in the winter. And we try to keep that tradition with each other. So we like to keep the summer open for meeting friends and going to different festivals and different powwows and things like that. Oh, in the summertime, you can tell stories that are teaching stories, stories that will help people live their life accordingly. The eagle feather, for instance, you would tell a story to a person why we use eagle feathers, if that's what they wanted to know. You don't have to say come back in the wintertime, so you would tell that story to the person that's wanting to learn about eagle feathers. Stories could be told by anyone that's willing to tell a story. Sometimes it just becomes a title upon you because you like telling stories, so you become a storyteller. And there's some people that are probably maybe gifted more than the others, but anybody can tell stories. And we all have different stories, right? And so in a setting like that, whoever's telling the stories might say, okay, I know you know a story, so why don't you share that with us? And so we'll encourage other people to do that. Storytelling for me came from just observing, watching people, listening to my own parents. And when I was younger, I'd go and listen to elder talk and learn from them. And you just collect stories. And part of my own life is sort of like history to my children, so you pass that history down. Like the hippie days, for instance, what happened at that time, and they become stories, right? And part of the hippie generation, for instance, was a prophecy. And so you tell that to your children, and it becomes a story. That's how I became a storyteller, I guess. Well, first of all, stories, when you tell them in the native language, and they're quite funny, and they're quite serious at the same time. And there's no swear words in our language, so you can't accidentally swear, right? But when you translate it into English, because sometimes we have to do that to other listeners, it might sound not too appropriate for some words to try and fit into the story. And so in that sense, we have to be kind of careful. And stories, like a healing story, would be a story where, for instance, this man that was digging, root or tilling his yard, his farm, came across a snake in the ground, because he root or tilled it, and of course the snakes are under the ground. So there was this snake badly awakened, and you know, and he picked it up, and since we like to be entertained, he picked it up and put it in this box that he found. And he was standing there having his coffee break, watching that snake, see how he would get out, right? But nothing really happened, so he went back to work. And as he was root-tilling his yard, he came across a frog that was underground as well. So he picked up the frog because he heard that snakes would eat frogs. And so he put it on into the box. And the snake was in one corner, and the frog went into the other corner, and they were just kind of looking at each other. And he stood there having his coffee, but nothing happened. So he went back to work. And as he was working his ground again, he unearthed a mouse. And he thought, well, frogs eat mouse and snakes eat frogs. Maybe something will happen eventually, right? I got to be entertained. And that's what he was thinking. And so he put this mouse in the box, and the mouse went in one corner. The frog was in his corner, and the snake continued to stay in his corner, all looking at each other. And the man went back to work, and he thought, well, I'll come and check after work and see who eats who. So he came back to work, and everybody was gone. And he's looking at the box, and there was a little hole in the corner of the box where the mouse was. The mouse had eaten the hole and escaped, and the snake followed, and the frog somehow managed to get out of that hole too. So that's the story. And sometimes the storyteller would stop there and continue to tell another story. And it would be up to you to decipher what the story meant to you, what it means to you. And so going home in a car with your family, you might discuss that. What it means is that that box represents the earth that we live on. And that snake, the frog, and the mouse represents all different nations that live upon this earth. And so you would tell that story in a race relations conference, for instance, in a discrimination workshop, to show we can live together. Because we're on this planet together, we have to help each other. And when those three different animals were put into that box, they helped one another. They didn't, even though their food chain to one another, they didn't eat each other in that box, but they helped each other. So that becomes a healing story that people can tell.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
There's also like historical stories, teaching stories, and prophetic stories, prophecy stories, different short stories, the circle concept that we use as First Nations people. Circle is important to First Nations people because, well, right, if you look at the sun, well, I don't encourage people to look at the sun, but the sun is round and the moon is round. And if you were to stand on the moon and look back at the earth, you'll notice that the earth is round. So right from the beginning of time, we knew the earth was round, because when you look at your own body, your whole body is round. You know, I've never seen a square head, even though we call each other square head sometimes. But everything that the Creator made is in a circle. Everything is round, your eyeballs. Then you can make a list of what's round in your body. And so the circle story is more of a creation story, I guess, because you talk about everything that was in a circle. And then you talk about how the tree's in a circle. The tree's round, and the branches are round, and even the little bugs that land on a tree are round. And then there's stories where we talk about, the elders will say, we have to get ready to meet our Creator when the trees start dying from the top. And so if you hear that story, say 100 years ago, you wouldn't know what they're talking about, in a sense. It becomes a prophetic story. But as you're looking at it in the year 2000, and the trees dying from the top, and I try to figure things out all the time. When I hear stories, when elders tell you stories, and they say, go and think about it. So I used to think about that, trees dying from the top. And then I came to realize after been involved with different groups of people in different situations, environmentalists and all that, engineers and scientists, you name it. And then when they were talking about acid rain coming down, the first thing the acid rain hits is the treetops. And so that's what the elders were talking about. As you walk on the mountain here, I'm always looking at the trees down below. And you can see some of them are beginning to die from the top. But it's when they all begin to die from the top, and then we have to get ready to meet our Creator. See, every nation has some kind of an ending, and the end of the world story. And you see these little cartoons with figures, the world will end tomorrow. Well, the Creator has given us signs to prepare us for these things. Trees dying from the top is one of them. It kind of looks bad, but I think if people begin to listen, I think we'd be given that extension, sort of. But people have to listen. That's why I like talking to radio, because people listen to the radio. When you go and speak to politicians, they don't listen. So what we have to do is phone scientists. People seem to listen to scientists. And when we tell a scientist what to do, and then he goes and tell people what to do, they listen to him. But they won't listen to Walt. So when I tell a scientist about the tree, then he goes and talks about the same thing, and then somebody will listen. Then when you look at the whole picture of people, for instance, there was the Hopi Nation in the States. I remember listening to this one elder talk, and he said, you know, one of the things that he heard when he was growing up was that there was going to be people that are going to be like the Hopi Nation. And these people are going to be going somewhere, but not going anywhere. And these people will just all be like the Hopi Nation. But these people will also be bleeding from the forehead, and they'll be bleeding from the arm. And when you see that happening, he was told, that's when you start sharing our stories. Okay? In the meantime, you just listen to all these stories. But when you see that happening, and you'll know when that's happening, that's when you have our go-ahead to go and tell all the stories we've been telling you. And this man, who's no longer with us, was going to Denver, Colorado, to lecture at a university. And he was trying to get there before nightfall so he can have a good rest and get up early in the morning and go and lecture. So he was there, and as he was driving, he saw these two girls hitchhiking, and their hair was flying in the wind, and you can see the hair flying, long hair. So he pulled over and stopped because he didn't want to see two young girls hitchhiking out in the bush really late. And when they opened the door, he realized there were two young men. And then by then it was too late to say, oh, don't get in. So they just got in. And then he asked them, where are you guys going? And then they said, where are you going? And he says, well, I'm going to Denver. And they said, well, man, we're going to go with you to Denver. You know. And I said, okay. And then so they talked, and they were talking like, man, they were using those kind of words all the time, man. When they got to Denver, he says, whereabouts do you want to get off? You want to go downtown or out? And they'll say, man, we'll just get off here, well, because we're going to hitchhike, continue to hitchhike. And he said, okay. And then he noticed as they were leaving that they had a red armbands, and they had like a bandana, a red bandana, and they had long hair, and they were blonde, and they had like buckskin jackets. And he says, where are you guys going then? He says, I don't know, wherever the next car takes us, we'll go. Thank you, man, we'll see you. And away they went. He was continued to drive to Denver. Listening to the radio, he heard on the radio station that in San Bernardino, California, there was a riot police going into this park to evict these people that were living like native people. And then the reporter says, I think these people are called hippies. They're the hippies, and they're trying to live like First Nations people, living off Mother Earth, living off the land. And they all have buckskin coats, and they all dress like Indians, but they're white people. You know, that's what he was saying. Then this man that was going to Denver was listening to this, and he realized what has just happened. He picked up two hippies, these two young men. They were going somewhere, but going nowhere. And they were like Indians. They wanted to be like Indians, First Nations people. In those days, we used to wear red armbands to signify the bloodshed of First Nations people in the head and the arm. And that's what that blood, red kerchiefs represented. Then he realized that prophecy or that story he was told has been fulfilled.
Hey!
Listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
The little girl, Arizona, her birthday was July 5th, right after July 4th, right around that time. And her dad asked her one time, "What would you like for your birthday this year?" And she said, "Well, I've never seen snow, Dad. And we live in Arizona. I hear of snow all the time, but we've never seen one. So I'd like to have snow for my birthday. I'd like to see snow." And her dad said, "Okay. Maybe if you talk to the Creator about it, like we always do. We pray in the morning and we pray in the evening. And during the daytime, ask the Creator about the snow. Maybe He will answer you." And develop your faith. So she said, "Okay, Dad, I'll do that." And so every morning they would pray together, talk to the Creator. And then after they pray, she would go to school. And after school, the father would see her praying outside by her play area there. And then she'd have supper. And then after supper, he'd see the little girl praying again. And she was always praying, right? And for about a couple of months before July 5th came along. And around July 2nd and 3rd, the father was beginning to worry, because he had bought her birthday gift, but but she was determined to see snow, so she can, he can see her praying and probably saying, Creator, I'd like to have snow for my birthday, you know, please answer my prayer. And this went on. And then he told his wife about it, and she said, well, you encouraged her, like you encouraged her to talk to the Creator about snow. So let's see what happens. Maybe it will snow. We don't know. We don't know what the Creator is going to do, says the mother. And he said, okay. So July 5th came along, the morning of her birthday, and the father got up a little earlier just to look outside. There was no snow. And his heart was just sad. And he saw his little girl get up and run by and opened the door, and she ran out, and he can see her in her play area, just standing there looking around, and he was kind of sad. He had told her maybe the Creator will give you snow, and he didn't know what to say. So she turned around, and she's smiling, and she comes running inside, and he's, just before he said something, she says, well, Dad, there's no snow. And he says, well, do you feel okay about that? You know, I know you've been praying about snow for your birthday, but do you feel okay? And the little girl says, yeah, yeah, the Creator said no. So we encourage each other to pray, but sometimes the Creator says no. We have to be thankful for that. So the little girl was happy in either way. So it's an encouragement to our children that whatever they pray for, sometimes they don't happen right away. They might not happen ever, but it's a lesson to pray, but not to expect anything to happen sometimes. I'll tell you one that only happened even this year. This young woman told me one day, she was sitting by the river, and this grass, one grass stood up there by the river, and she says, what does that mean, Walton? And I said, I don't know. Maybe the wind blew it, I don't know, but I don't have the answer right now, but when I don't get the answer, maybe I can share the answer with you. And anyways, we left it like that. And then I happened to go to Edmonton for a meeting. And coming back, I was looking down at the prairies. And I was thinking back, what we used to talk about there was, you know, like many years ago, thousands and thousands of years ago, when there was no lawnmowers or things to cut the grass with. We used to have our dancers that would go ahead and step on the grass to the size of a football field and step on the grass until it all lay down. Something like crop circles, right? and then people would come Friday and they would have a dance and socialize Saturday and Sunday, and it's a powwow time. And then and Sunday night or Monday, because at that time there was really no 9 o'clock, 9 to 5 kind of work. Most of it was farming. They would leave and go home. And after they left, a few hours later, the grass would stand up again to the way it was before. And this went on for many years. They never had to cut that grass. They just kind of lay down. Then they would dance and socialize and meet old friends and all that. And then I was thinking of that, looking down from the airplane. And then I was thinking, you know, that's the way our culture was, the native culture, the Indian culture. Our culture was stepped on. It was pushed to the ground, and it lay dormant for the longest time. But then our culture stood up again. To my recollections, I think our Indian way of life started to come back in 1970, during the time of the hippie generation movement, part of that whole prophecy. So I was thinking of that. So our culture was beginning to heal when the grass stood up again. And that's where our culture was. And that's the way it is today. And so when I saw that young lady, I told her, you know, I think I got the answer for you. And I said, when you saw that grass stand up before you, whatever was hurting you before is beginning to heal. Whatever it was, then it's going away. So the grass was just telling you that you're on a healing journey, like you're just about through that part of your life. It's time to go on with other things. I think children like to listen to funnier stories, maybe. These are more, I think, adult stories. But I think, see, what I like to do is tell stories to parents. I used to really enjoy telling stories to children. And then one day I kind of realized, well, I'm taking the place of that parent. So I'd rather, that's why I like to tell story to parents. So you can go home and tell that same story to your children, then it's yours. So you don't take the job of the parent, you give the job to the parent to tell it to her children or his children. So that's why I like telling stories to adults. So I'm more adult orientated. I did realize one time telling stories hyper children, they'll stop and listen. They'll take that time and just lay there and listen to you instead of crawling around. So that's encouraging. So it must be a pretty good story for a hyper kid to stop for like 15 minutes. So stories, I think we're all stories, right?
myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.